Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, July 29th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Governor Dayton floats the idea of a special session, the state saves big on health care, and the Voting Rights Act hits 50. Governor Dayton is considering calling a special legislative session to help areas around Lake Mille Lacs if walleye fishing season is forced to end early, as appears likely. Dayton is suggesting low-interest loans, property tax breaks, and state help with marketing for Mille Lacs resorts and other area businesses. Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd says he thinks it may be too soon to be talking about bringing back the legislature. Dowd talked this morning on the radio with NPR's Kathy Werzer.
I suggested to the governor in our conversation yesterday that we put together a working group of legislators from that area and also legislators who specialize in the issue areas effective tourism, natural resources, those sorts of issues, and get them around a table with the governor's commissioners and issue experts to really look at all solutions and try to think outside the box and figure out if there's a way we can solve this.
What types of aid do you think you would look at or lawmakers would look at for Mille Lacs businesses? Just straight cash or something else?
Well, the governor suggested low-interest loans and also some sort of local property tax forgiveness. I'm not sure if those will be the ultimate solutions, and I think we really need to consider anything and everything. Maybe it's the ultimate solution is something we haven't thought of yet.
How much money might we be talking about here?
Well, the governor initially indicated to me that he thought it was somewhere between 10 and 20 million worth of aid that he thought would be necessary. I think it's probably a bit too early to tell as this is kind of just unfolding now.
Couldn't this be the new normal that we're talking about? Might this set a standard for future years where the walleye season may end early as well?
Well, it potentially could, and you know, my concern also is how are we managing the walleye population in the lake, and if we do increase the stocking of walleye in Lake Mille Lacs, of course, that takes some time for those fish to be of a size that folks can catch and enjoy catching. So this could be a situation that lasts for 3 or 4 years before we have the walleye population to a level that would allow for fishing throughout the season.
It sounds as if for you, I'm listening to you talk here, Mr. Speaker, that there are still some unanswered questions before you would agree to a special session in August.
I think that's probably accurate. We're very concerned about the situation. We want to make sure we do what's right by these resorts. We don't want to see them suffering because of this closing of the season early. But we also want to make sure we're doing the right thing, and we want to look at all options. So I'm hoping that working group can get together in the next couple of days and take a look at what the situation is, what's caused it, and ultimately, hopefully, all of the possible solutions. And let's try to find something that can provide some relief for these resorts in the best way possible. And I think we have to be creative, probably.
If there is going to be a special session, would you look at an agenda that could include disaster relief for the Brainerd Lakes area after the storms came through?
I think we absolutely would. That's kind of been the tradition that we deal with these disaster relief issues as they crop up in special sessions. We did put some money into an account, and I think we put about $10 million that we refurbished into that account so that we wouldn't need to call special sessions. However, if we do come back for a special session, I think we certainly could deal with the storm damage from those recent storms.
Do you have any indication from the governor as to when he could call a session?
I think it's probably a bit too early to tell. We talked initially about possibly in August, and I think the governor would like to provide some level of assurance to the resorts around the lake by letting them know that we plan to call one within a certain window. I think it's just a bit too early. Hopefully we'll know that within the next few days.
House Speaker Kurt Dowd talking to Kathy Werzer. Dowd says if there is a special session, help for the Brainerd Lakes area would also likely be discussed. That area was hit by a strong storm earlier this summer. Governor Dayton's administration says renegotiating state health care contracts with HMOs will save taxpayers $650 million. Dayton and Human Services Commissioner Lucinda Jessen announced the windfall yesterday, saying the competitive bidding on Medicaid and Minnesota care contracts is a good way to protect state and federal taxpayer money. But the new contracts mean at least two businesses will see a dramatic loss in revenue. Tom Scheck has that story.
The state is saving money because it renegotiated the Medicaid and Minnesota Care contracts for 815,000 people enrolled with managed care organizations around the state. Starting next year, Human Services Commissioner Lucinda Jessen says the new contracts will save the state $450 million. She also said healthcare companies will refund $200 million to the state because the people enrolled in the state-subsidized health insurance plans in 2014 weren't as sick as expected.
But today's announcement is another huge milestone of saving about $650 million in savings for federal and state taxpayers. It's a great stride. It's a great thing for taxpayers, but it's also, I think, a really good thing for our enrollees, giving the quality of care that we know we are purchasing through this latest procurement.
Jessen said the state will get to keep about a third of the $650 million. The rest will be sent back to the federal government, which pays for a portion of Medicaid. The Dayton administration decided in 2011 to open the contracts to competitive bidding. In 2013, the state saved money on contracts in the 7-county metro area. In 2014, competitive bidding was done in 27 counties. This year, all 87 counties were competitively bid, and Jessen said the costs of the contracts are 15% lower than last year. In total, they say they've saved more than $1.6 billion because of the process. Governor Dayton says the competitive bidding model adopted when he first took office works.
Should have been done sooner, should have been done before we arrived.
The biggest loser as a result of the contract reshuffling is Minneapolis-based UCare. The HMO, which currently serves Medicaid clients in 58 counties, will not serve any next year.
For the company, it means the loss of 360,000 of our little over 500,000 members on January 1st.
UCare Senior Vice President of Public Affairs and Marketing, Gita Wooster, says officials at the HMO were shocked the state didn't continue its contract with her company. She said UCare will remain a viable health plan, but said some of its programs could be cut, including a mobile dental unit and programs that serve immigrant communities.
And we have to figure out, you know, which ones we're going to continue and which ones make sense to continue.
Another county-based purchasing plan is also facing a major loss in business after losing out on contracts for 10 of the 11 rural counties that it serves. Leota Lind, CEO of South Country Health Alliance, says her organization will lose 85% of its membership. She said there is the potential that her organization, which is owned by counties, will close.
Yesterday, we were all just in shock and frustrated and really just trying to get our head around what this means for our members, for our counties, for our providers.
The three biggest HMOs to pick up market share as a result of the contract bids are Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, and Medica. Commissioner Jessen says her department will work to ensure that enrollees have an easy transition to the new health plans by January 1st. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News, at the Capitol.
Events are planned in Minnesota this week and next week to mark the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The landmark federal law banned literacy tests, poll taxes, and other discriminatory barriers that African American voters were facing at the time in the South. Minnesotans who were involved in getting the law passed and others are reflecting on its impact. And as Tim Pugmire reports, they're also highlighting the work they see as unfinished.
As a young girl in Texas, civil rights pioneer and educator Josie Johnson helped her father gather signatures on petitions to try to abolish that state's poll tax. Johnson, who later moved to Minnesota, finally saw discriminatory voting rules outlawed when she was in her 30s with the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
We finally got the legal right to cast a vote. And I believe as a citizen, casting your vote and being able to express your wishes regarding critical issues and people is what citizenship is all about. So for me, this is a historic moment.
Soon after the violent attack on marchers in Selma, Alabama, President Lyndon Johnson called on Congress to take strong action to end voter disenfranchisement. Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law on August 6, 1965.
Today is a triumph for freedom, as huge as any victory that's ever been won on any battlefield.
The six Democrats and four Republicans who made up Minnesota's congressional delegation at the time stood united in support of voting rights. Republican Al Quie, now 91, represented Minnesota's 1st District.
I think it was one of the great significant things we did. What really could be greater than protecting your right to vote? Now you've got a voice in government. That means democracy can work.
Democrat Donald Fraser, who is also 91, represented Minnesota's 5th District.
It was a major step in helping improve our system of government.
There are two more surviving members of Minnesota's 1965 congressional delegation, Walter Mondale and Alec Olson. All four will be honored Thursday afternoon in St. Paul during an event to mark the Voting Rights Act anniversary. Josie Johnson will also be honored. Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon, the host of the event, said the recognition is well-deserved.
There was widespread disagreement within the congressional delegation on so many issues, but on this issue, a signal issue of its time and a very important moral issue, all Minnesotans in Congress came together, and of course Josie Johnson, a noted civil rights activist, was right there with those members of Congress, and we want to honor them. We want to say thank you.
Simon said the anniversary is also an opportunity to look ahead and take steps to enhance voting rights. As the state's top elections official, Simon is advocating for more early voting options, pre-registration for high school students, and the restoration of voting rights for convicted felons who've completed their sentences.
I think the key thing is to discuss ways we can always be improving access to the polls, making sure that all eligible voters in Minnesota get that chance.
The Voting Rights Act required some southern states and local jurisdictions to get federal approval before changing election laws. The U.S. Supreme Court struck down that section of the law 2 years ago. Minnesota Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison remains concerned about the 2013 ruling. Ellison, who is the first African American to represent Minnesota in Congress, said the court watered down the act and opened the door to more of the photo identification laws that he opposes.
They know that there are a lot of low-income people, a lot of people of color, a lot of seniors, people who they don't want to vote, students who don't have a government-issued ID. So they want to push these things to exclude people.
This week, in advance of the Voting Rights Act anniversary, Ellison introduced federal legislation that would prohibit photo ID requirements to vote. He also introduced a bill to require same-day registration in all federal elections. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.